Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 817. On the podcast today, I have John Kennedy, CEO, and Mark Slade, proposed managing director of Proxarma, that's PRX, and they answer questions on the recent fundraise and what they hope to achieve going forward. Plus, Miles Pelham, chairman of Obtala, OBT, discusses today's news regarding investments in the company made by its directors and some of the board changes, plus the completion of the Wood Boys acquisition. I also have Linda Palanza, COO of OneView, and ticker there is ONEV, and Linda discusses the business and some of the revenue-generating contracts they've recently won. Plus, it's a Monday, of course, because Malky's here. Malky, who's an oil and gas sector authority, talks about the following stocks: Hurricane Energy, Sound Energy, Victoria Oil and Gas, and Faro Petroleum. And of course, I have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Kennedy, CEO, and Mark Slade, proposed managing director of Proxarma, that's PROX. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, well, we've got a few questions here, and you've had a bit of news out recently. We'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, for people not aware of Proxarma or people new to the podcast, can you explain what the business is all about, please, John?
Yeah, hi. Proxarma is a business of two divisions. Our primary division is a mobile location data and intelligence business, and we help companies connect the online world with the offline world using mobile location data. And to do this, we use our very latest location technologies. Our secondary division is our mobile payments business. And just for clarity, the placing and the raise we're just about to go through, we'll see those funds exclusively directed into the new data business.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, let's go a bit more into that raise, because I know that raised a lot of interest among investors. So explain it again, why you're raising the money and in this way. And of course, it was an open offer and a placing there, and it's quite a big discount, around about 79% discount. Could you explain why this happened and what it's for, please, John, in more detail?
Yeah, sure. There's a few questions in there, Justin, so I'll break them down. So first of all, what is the raise? So it was a 1.2 million placing, followed by an open offer up to a value of 4.1 million. However, probably the most salient fact is that the minimum that we're raising here is 3.1 million. And of that 3.1 million, the company will be able to use 375,000 plus warrants to pay off the current debt with the business. And that current debt is around the 3 million mark. So that will be a significant shift for the business at a really critical point in time. And just to pick up the point around the discount, yes, I mean the discounts, it's not good for any existing shareholders, I accept that. And just to make the point that I'm an existing shareholder, so I'm as disappointed as anyone. However, it is absolutely critical that we do raise the 3.1 million minimum. That is because we didn't sell the digital payments division earlier on in the year.
I understand. So, importantly for you going forward, you're debt-free. Should this raise, obviously, you raise an amount of money. I understand that. Okay, so talking about, you mentioned their digital payments division. For a while, this was up for sale. And I saw on social media a lot of people saying this will be sold for a lot of money. So what happened there? Why didn't you actually end up selling it in the end?
Yeah, I mean, it was really disappointing, Justin. I mean, we really gave that a good crack. I mean, it's one of my specialisms in terms of M&A. We tried to sell that for 18 months. We had a number of interested parties. However, in spite of many of those interested parties progressing a long way down the process, we didn't actually get any that offered a valuation that allowed us to refinance the business. So in not getting those offers, we had to turn to doing a placing. However, we took the opportunity to reduce the cost base of that division by 1.2 million. And that now allows that business to be operating as a profitable division.
I understand. So right now, I suppose you're at a critical point in your sort of journey at Proxarma. So with that in mind, why should investors stick with you, John?
Well, I mean, it's been a difficult couple of years since I joined, actually. And I think one of the things that I would say at this particular point is post-placing, this will be a debt-free company. And that will be the first time since I joined that it's ever been debt-free. I think secondly, we're operating in a really hot area, which is the location data area. We have another division that's actually profitable in its own right and helps service the rest of the business with some positive cash flow. We've never had it under better control in terms of cost. And we have the right management team and the right board that are all investing in this placing. So where we sit today is the most positive position we've ever been in since the day I joined.
I understand. Okay, Mark, over to you. So your proposed managing director. So explain a bit about why you decided to join the business, Mark.
Inherently, the value in this business, the reason why I've joined is the data that business collects on, I believe we're up to about 2.5 million users at the minute. So we're able to track the movements of 2.5 million people and then use that data, manufacture that data into meaningful insights into a number of different sectors. And that's the interesting thing to me. So for the advertising community, which I've come from, you can package that data up to allow advertisers to target more effectively, or for advertisers to understand the effectiveness of their digital advertising on real world actions like store visits. For city planners, we can use that data to help them decide how to build cities, how to refine the for them to understand how consumers move around cities. And for financial services companies, we've seen demand for these guys to understand retail sales as a barometer for retail sales. So it's an interesting area. There's a lot of data that we can get from it.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, mobile data is hugely important, isn't it? Especially for commercial companies who want to know people's habits and stuff like that. But you see this as a very hot sector going forward, do you?
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity in this sector. Snapchat bought a company called Place, which do a very similar thing to Proxarma in the US. Telefonica recently purchased a company called Static over here in the UK. So there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of investment going into this area, which is understandable because it's still a very new area, and there's a lot of opportunities. The application of AI into the data that we get and using machine learning can really help us deliver some significant value. And actually, one of the big things that attracted me to Proxarma is the fact that they're on AIM allows us to look at acquisitive as well as organic growth. There is a lot of interesting companies in this space that would fit nicely in within the umbrella. But obviously, we have to prove the business the business model first, and that's the core objective for the next 12 months. Prove the business case, grow our audience, and get more value out of the data that we're generating. And it's actually a very similar business to my previous business, you know, in terms of growing an audience and monetizing it.
Okay, absolutely. All right. Well, guys, there's one thing left I'm going to ask you to do, and that's every day in the podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. So if someone's listening right now and like the space you're in and where you're at in your journey, but they're not following you, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, Justin. So I think if I had to summarise the three reasons, I think probably the one of the key reasons is that we have spent the last 6 to 9 months completely getting costs under control. We've taken a lot of cost out of this business. And I think that cost control, along with making the company debt-free and therefore allowing itself to control its own destiny, is a really, really key reason. Secondly, I would say ever since the start of the year, we've now been installing the new board and the new management team, and we have that proven experience with people such as Mark that can help us in this market become successful. We're all completely committed to that, and I think that's demonstrated through the fact that all board members have invested in this particular placing round. And then the third point is, as Mark said, you know, the business, the data business is in a really hot sector. It allows us now to use some of the growth we've showed over the last 2 or 3 months to further grow that into some pretty exceptional data volumes. And as I said, you know, it's a hot sector. And for that reason, I would expect a flow of successes over the coming months, which I really hope that our investors will be pleased with.
John, Mark, good to speak to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Miles Pelham, chairman of Optala. That's OBT ticker. Miles, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin.
Now, you've had some news out today. We'll get to that in a bit. But what I'd like to do to start, for people who are new to investing or new to the podcast and they haven't heard of you, Miles, can you give a brief summary as to what the business is about, please?
Sure. Optala Limited is a $65 million market cap company listed on the AIM market of the London Stock Exchange. We're an agriculture and timber business with our timber assets in Mozambique and Gabon and the Ivory Coast. And our agricultural assets in Tanzania. We're also a socially impactful company, so everything that we do is along lines of that ethos.
Yeah, well, listen, you were a newly award winner, because I've been just run an award at the Impact Company 2017. Can you explain that, give the details about this, please, if you could, Miles?
Yeah, sure. Well, we've been a member of the Social Stock Exchange for over a couple of years now, and clearly a very strong focus of ours. We hired Jessica Kumis to the board last year, and she's making great change and great progress in that regard. And congratulations to the team for winning that award. It's a great honour.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get to the news then. So you had news out this morning that you've completed the Woodbois acquisition that will bring in significant revenues. But what about the profits? Will it bring in profits as well, Miles?
Well, we certainly think so. We wouldn't have bought it otherwise, but it's a very good deal for both parties. Throughout an extremely intensive DD process, which created over reams and reams of reports, we found a very healthy, promising business with significantly more upside than we had expected, actually. The allowable cut is almost ridiculous, 90 times what we had expected, massive resource there. And the actual size of the concessions under management was more than two times what we'd expected, at 96,000 hectares. So, a good deal. Very, very happy with it. And it's credit to the founders of Woodbois that we're very happy to have them under our umbrella. You can see with this acquisition that the face of Optala is beginning to change, and the Woodbois addition certainly leaves us collectively a much stronger company going forwards.
Yeah. I went for the French pronunciation. They're Woodbois. They're using Woodbois. I don't know which is correct, but maybe went a bit too flashy, I did. So you just mentioned that the face is changing. And Optala now is quite different kind of beast to what it was when you inherited it over a year ago. So where does it go from here, Miles?
We only intend for it to go one way, and that's onwards and upwards, and we'll go forwards to respectable revenues. We'll work to move forward to partnerships with NGOs, sovereign wealth funds, and world organisations supporting the social impact agenda. We'll go forwards to strengthening the management personnel and information infrastructure systems that we have, as been rolled out happening in 2017. And we'll try to move towards rapid expansion of production capacity. Hopefully, as we achieve all of those goals, We'll move forward to some more institutional and long-term investor recognition and hopefully have them take the plunge and invest in Albatala.
Okay, cool. Now, you know, you've done well on raising money. You seem to have some good connections and high-placed friends. But in the news this morning, you announced that NED Frank Scolaro and Finance Director Philip Coeing are retiring. Will this affect anything in any way?
No, I don't think it's going to affect the runnings of the company. I don't think Frank's departure means that we're going to lose support of the mainly Asian backers that we've had, or that there's, you know, that there's been any falling out. Frank's departure was very amicable and long discussed between the two of us. The fact that he's now 100% comfortable with the management team running the business is testament to the foundations that we've laid over the past year. Having the opportunity to appoint a new competent CFO that might be in an Asian jurisdiction and have access to significant funds not readily available in London and Europe, I think may turn out to be a great benefit to the company, particularly as we pursue a dual listing. It's very promising for the company.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, Miles, if anyone's listening right now and they like the sound of where you're headed, and the changing face of Albatala, but they're not following you on Vox Markets. Could you give them three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button, please?
Sure. Well, Albatala is a company with exposure to two of the world's most in-demand yet diminishing resources of food and timber. Just the population growth alone in the area that we operate should see demand soar, let alone what you can tell from backing out the soaring populations in Asia. So the second point would be that we're a new and emboldened management team, each with a very successful history behind us. We put our money where our mouth is. You'll see today in the news that we've invested more money into the company. That's in the pref with a strike price of 20p. So that shows where we think that we can take the company to. And we're a member of the Social Stock Exchange. I'm very proud to have a strong, socially impactful ethos running through the company.
Excellent stuff. Miles, good to chat to you, and hopefully we speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. All the best.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Linda Palanza, Chief Operating Officer of OneView, and the ticker there is OneV, or O-N-E-V. Linda, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, listen, this is for the benefit of me and listeners, because I'm not quite aware of your company yet. It's come up my radar of late, but I haven't done any research. So anyone listening right now, and for me, Linda, give us a brief summary as to what the company's all about, please.
Okay. OneView is all about technology in the store, and it's really about the retailers need to really change the way they're servicing customers in the store. These customers are highly connected to both their mobile devices, they're online, they're doing research, and now coming into the store, walking up to dusty old tills that have almost no connectivity beyond the store. And what we're doing is replacing those tills with mobile devices with highly connected cloud capabilities, utilizing analytics and utilizing all kinds of cloud capabilities to allow the stores and the retailers to have far more information to better service their customers.
I understand. So can you give an example of the kind of information that say a new connected store would get now that they wouldn't have gotten with the old tills?
Absolutely. So let's take a really unique example. If we talk about one of our largest customers, Discount Tire, based out of North America, 1,000 stores, they generate well over $4.5 billion in revenue. They're looking at the fact that people research their tires on online. They then want to set up an appointment, so they use our technology to set up the appointment to say which store they want to come into. When they come into the store, they take a tablet. They want to go out and visit the vehicle. They're going to produce a work order of how they're going to rotate the tires, and this is all digitally presented to the store associate. It can make recommendations based on the big data that they have available to them on certain things that they want to do during the service. They sign this off with the customer. The customer automatically goes into a service list, which is our technology. They want to get that customer in and out in 30 minutes or less. It tracks that type of information. It can SMS the customer if they found a problem. Maybe they forgot to leave their key to unlock the wheel. and communicate with that customer in real time. When the service is done, they communicate to the customer it's done. They go over the service with the customer, and then they actually take the money and the payment. And so that's a very unique. And now we have all of this data that we pass back up into the cloud about which tires, what we learned about it, what was the tread depth, all of that. So that's just tires and wheels. You can turn that around and say somebody like Moulton Brown wants to become far more intimate with their customer. They have a wonderful clientele that follows them, is very loyal to them. When they come in the store, they want to be able to tell them about demos. They want to tell them about new products. They want to better service that customer and understand who that customer is, and ultimately sell them the products that they need, and have the customer leaving the store feeling that they have a very strong relationship with that customer.
Yeah, understand. I mean, of course, if you understand the customer, then you understand their needs, I suppose. And so as far as in this country is concerned, I've just seen, I've scrolled through some of your RNSs, and you've done some kind of agreement with Wix and Travis Perkins, haven't you?
That's correct. They're one of our great partners. We just went live a few months ago in the first store, and are planning our rollout to all 250 stores. Travis Perkins had a vision for really their the entire company that they needed to modernize. They needed to, replace very old technology throughout the group. And the first project that we took on was to replace what was quite old technology in the Wix retail stores. And it was a very collaborative effort of us building a platform. They are only at the beginning of this. The first thing we did is just replace the tills so that when you come through, we're scanning you, we're collecting your money, we're taking your contactless or whatever, and you're going out. But this is just the beginning of where they see their business going and expanding more on the promotions and the online and the cross-channel capabilities that we all want, whether we're a trade contractor, or whether we're a consumer out doing our own home improvements. We all want to be able to utilize all the capabilities where we can shop online and pick it up in the store, and be able to have people understand what it is we're trying to do and provide us the promotions that make sense to us.
Okay, excellent stuff. And a couple of questions here, Linda. So first of all, you listed on AIM in March. It's over a year now. So March 2016, is that correct?
That is correct.
Excellent. And so how many sort of clients do you have, paying clients do you have at the moment? And how do they pay? What do they pay for? Is there a monthly thing, or is it a one-off? Is it a certain term? How does it work?
So our customers are generally large enterprise grade customers. So they our customers all place their solutions in the cloud. Mm-hmm. We have 7 customers now, I believe it is, and 6 of them are hosting with us. So they pay an annual hosting fee. So we have the recurring revenues that are now up over $3 million a year, which is quite impressive for a company that introduced their product to the market just 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we are continuing to bring on these cloud-based customers. They pay annually for their service, as well as they also will pay for implementation services, which are generally can span from anywhere from 4 months to many years, depending on the size and the complication of the solution that they're putting in.
Yeah, I can see that the guys you mentioned there, Discount Tire Corporation, mm-hmm. quite a big RNS, is a multi-million dollar deal there, is that correct?
That's correct. They realized that during the project that the complication of hosting the solutions themselves was actually getting in the way of the project, and that we had best practices around how to host our solutions, and it was really making more sense to get out of that market and focus on what they are trying to do, which is service their customers. And we've seen that trend. We moved from, when we first started in the market, hosting was something that everybody wanted to do. But retailers certainly were still saying, well, we think it's a good idea, but we're not sure that we want to host our in-store solutions. And in this 3.5 years, there's been a fundamental shift. We're quite proud of the fact that we're one of the early adopters to the market of being able to have built from scratch a point of sale or tilling solution that was built from the beginning to be hosted in the cloud. And as you can see from Discount Tire, Moulton Brown, and our most recent announcement with Carhartt, that this is really taking hold and retailers are looking at this solution as the way to run stores in the future.
Yeah, Discount Tire. Are they just U.S.-based?
They are. They're based out of Scottsdale, Arizona.
And are they quite well known? Is it across all of the U.S.? Because was it 900-odd outlets, do they have, or something?
Yes, almost at 1,000 now. Yes, Discount Tire is well known all over the United States. However, they don't have stores in the New England area where I happen to be based, just outside of Boston. But they are very well known. They're listed in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest running commercial. They have one commercial of an old lady throwing a tire through a window that where it says, "If you don't like our tires, just send them back." That's been running for a very long time. So they're a well-known company I think their reputation is all about their service. So we're very, very proud to have them.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've briefly mentioned it, but if we can go into a bit more detail on the latest agreement you've done with Carhartt. What's all that about then, Linda?
We're very excited about Carhartt for a number of reasons. One is that this is the second SaaS agreement that we've signed, Molton Brown and Carhartt, where they're a smaller group of retailers. So, 60 stores, 30 stores, whereas our other customers have been very large, multi-billion dollar or sterling companies. So they were our early adopters. They paved the way for us on what they said. Retail fundamentally has to change. It has to adopt technology. We're going to go with this very disruptive company to help us get there, and this is the way we're going to do it. But with the likes of Molton Brown and with the likes of Carhartt, now what you're seeing is this adoption of these smaller and growth companies that are really investing in retail, who want to get on this wave, and they see that this is the way of the future, and they want to join the company, and they see themselves as an opportunity to be a big fish in a small pond, to have a voice at the table, elbow to elbow with these very large, influential retailers. So it's very exciting for us, and we're really looking forward to continuing to really go after, both markets, but really love this. You know, we all hear about the doom and gloom of retail's retail outlets closing all over the world, and we hear about it often. But I often tell people, you need to look at this a different way. The ones that are closing are the ones that unfortunately haven't adopted technology. And, not everybody likes to hear this, but it's actually a fact, which is the millennials are, the largest living generation now and will outpace the baby boomers by 2018. And so when I'm talking to retailers, I have to say, these are the people you need to look at. These are the people that are going to be your revenue stream. And they adopt technology. So you have to adopt technology. And what you're seeing is nobody talks about the smaller companies, the young companies that are going from 5 stores to 300 stores, and how many of them are doing that because they are adopting technology. So that's a very, very exciting segment to us.
Yeah, okay. And absolutely. But just looking at now the recent fundraise. So you've raised, or you will be raising, $3.9 million. And so what's that going towards? What are you going to use those funds for, Linda?
Well, we're really excited because we've, we've generated over the last year, well over a $25 million pipeline. And so, and we have a product now that's running live in stores. It's matured. We've had these partners, these customers, helping to invest in the future of this product and put together something that is really meaningful. So now it's time to really focus on the sales and marketing, to really take advantage and really focus on this pipeline, and to bring more customers to the table. So we'll be primarily investing in building out our sales and marketing and partner channels globally, as well as continuing to invest in the product and to keep our lead in the industry against our competition.
Excellent stuff. And Linda, on the podcast, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets. So if someone's listening right now and they like what you're saying and they like the space you're in and they like the fact that you're signing up new clients at left, right and center here and you've got cash, could you give them 3 reasons, if they aren't following you, why they should hit the follow button on your page, please?
I think the first reason is this is very much a growth stock, and that it's at the right place at the right time, you know, and it's well managed by people that have been around the industry for a very long time. I think the second is that it's well backed by influential retailers that are driving the product. So these ideas weren't just our ideas. These are ideas of retailers that had capital to spend and realized that they needed to fundamentally disrupt retail in order to be able to let's say survive. And I think the last is that we're global. You know, we're not the largest company in the world, but we do have a global footprint and continue to get interest all over the world. And so we're not reliant on any one territory, which is also quite attractive, I believe, you know, to anybody, that we have the ability to kind of go where the interest is.
Excellent, Linda. It's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
It's a Monday, so joining me is M for Malky, the Oil and Gas Sector Authority. Malky, thanks for joining me, fella.
It's a pleasure, Justin. Nice to be back on.
Cool. What are you chatting about today? What's on your radar?
Well, there's a lot going on, but we have to talk about Hurricane after the raise, Sound Oil, Victoria Oil and Gas, and Faroe Petroleum today.
Yeah, okay, so $520 million raised via equity and bonds. That's a fair chunk of change, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big raise, but not a lot bigger than that they expected. You know, at the Capital Markets Day 2 or 3 months ago, they told us that it would be a short $500 million, you know, but there was a difference to a certain extent. The market were expecting a lump of debt, which couldn't come, partly because of the government situation. There's a bit of a difficulty in the technicals on the government front at the moment. So $300 million of equity and $220 million of convertible is a big lump, and it's probably at a bigger discount than you might have expected after the warrant situation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they announced on Thursday afternoon that they were going to do it, and they closed immediately on Friday morning. And I think raising 300 million quid's worth of equity, which was oversubscribed. I was speaking to a client on Friday who was scaled down in the equity part. Mm-hmm. Is an incredible heroic achievement, I think. And whilst, you know, doing it at 32p means that there's be indigestion for a while, and things are going to take a little while to get back up again, it gives them headroom to do a farm out. Some people were expecting a farm out almost with this announcement. Mm-hmm. Hurricane have made it absolutely clear that, first of all, the data room is extremely active with a number of people looking to come in with them. But they've made it clear there are two things that are absolutely positive about this. First of all, they can run with 100%. They've still got 100% of this, mm-hmm. You have to bear in mind. They can run the Lancaster EPS all the way to first oil, which is expected to be first half of 2019, with 100% of it. And it gives them to pretty much a good amount of scope to do a farm out at some stage. The market is expecting around 50%, and the operatorship. I think they've made it absolutely clear that I think they said that the full field development isn't their game, and I would expect that to be the case. So don't forget, this EPS is bringing on, you know, almost like a long-term test in 2019, 30,000 barrels a day or so, which will give them some decent revenue, and I think they'll farm out 50% and the operatorship between now and then. We've got, as I say, a number of buyers in there. In the meantime, there's plenty of news to come. They'll obviously do an FID, a final investment decision, as soon as they've got this this funding confirmed by the shareholders. They've got a CPR expected later in the year, because they've had four back-to-back wells, so there's a lot of data to process, and I'm expecting the Lincoln and Halifax CPR numbers to come through later in the year, and that'll give them a massive de-risking of both the what they're calling the Greater Lancaster and the Greater Warwick area. So, you know, all in all, yeah, a little bit of indigestion, but massive demand for the shares, strong support from Kerrigan and Crystal Amber, the two big shareholders, and other shareholders. I think the value on this thing is immense. It's obviously not going to come out in the next 5 minutes, but it'll come out in due course. And so long term, it's still absolutely peach of an investment.
Yeah, and what I can say, well, this is lovely here, 32 pence. May stick around for a while, but now they've raised money there, it's obviously a good support level, you know. So I doubt whether it'll go further, much further than this, but lower, you know, because there's that huge amount of cash raised. So worth keeping an eye on. So that's Hurricane.
I think that's right. And, you know, you always get a bit of indigestion. And, of course, with people buying the stock in at 32p, you know, there's the temptation as soon as it starts to go up, you'll see sellers into that, but not the long-term players.
Exactly. Okay, Malky, what's next?
Sound Energy is next, because they have announced this morning that after about 4 years of playing with it, that the Badile well in Milan looks like it's uncommercial. They've still got further work to do on it, and they've got signs of gas and a decent bit of pay, but it doesn't look like it's commercial. So it's very disappointing in the sense that there was an upside. I had an upside of about 50p a share in this one, but it was an upside from the current price. So, you know, the shares have been given a good old shake this morning. Mm-hmm. But I think that's probably a little bit overdone. There will be people who going around saying that the shares were overvalued or that they didn't have the, you know, the full value in them from, or Tendrara was too high or whatever. But actually, the potential of Sound, given their Eastern Morocco situation, is still very strong. And I think that you know, you have taken away potential the size of the Badile number, but as I say, the shares come back down to 50p. Certainly, I wouldn't have had, you know, I wouldn't have had any more than 50p in it from the previous price. So it actually might look quite an interesting play at the moment. They've got a strong Eastern Morocco play still. It's well financed. They've got Schlumberger in there. It's backed by big local funds who are taking a big lump of Sound, and it's quick and easy and reasonably cheap to develop. I think that this might be quite an interesting buying opportunity. I expect news from Sidi Mokhtar, which I visited 2 weeks ago, where they're drilling some very interesting wells and probably will drill more wells again at a deeper level. So for those people who are prepared to look a little further out, I think Sound Energy still looks like a very interesting play.
Yeah, but it's dropped. It's run down around 24% today. It's down, and of course, like anything, when you have a drop that size, it'll be a couple of days of churn. You know, if you hadn't had a chance of getting before, but still believe in James Parsons, and also, you know, in sympathy with that, Echo Energy has fallen quite a bit. It was down about 13%, but now it's down to around about 9%. So, you know, there's always opportunity in the markets, isn't it? You know, when you think a share price has gone away from you sometimes, you'll have this bit of churn and a bit of doubt. And but, you know, look at the longer-term picture, you may think, hang on, it's still pretty much intact, you know. So there's always opportunity. The market always throws up a bit of opportunity, I think, you know.
It does indeed. And what investors mustn't forget is that in Sound, as much as in Echo, the James Parsons situation is that he's always going to try and give shareholders a big return. You know, he's always going to try and drill high risk prospects with, you know, it comes with the territory that you get the odd disappointment. Mm-hmm. But he wants to return huge amounts of shareholders if possible. And in both cases, there is still plenty of upside.
Yeah, marvellous. And anything else, Marky?
Well, yeah, two quick ones. Victoria Oil and Gas reported on Friday that there was extremely positive update on their Log Barber drilling, gas drilling, where they're drilling two wells next to each other, basically on a small rail, and their the net sands are exceeded expectations, as they say. Mm-hmm. With the first well, the LA 107, they've already got a high pressure flow line ready to take the gas off there. Both wells will be completed in the third quarter. Once they've got this gas behind the pipe, as they say, they'll be in a very strong position. They're in a very strong position, Justin, because Douala, which is the second city but the largest and port city of Cameroon, has huge gas demand of, you know, at least 150 million scf's a day. There's no one else producing the stuff. They're delivering it. They're laying down the pipe. They've got very strong likelihood of a renewed contract at the end of this year with ENEO, who take a huge amount of their gas. They've got a plethora of industrial plants. I visited a number of them. They do the Guinness plant out there, which is most interesting. And the local customers are, without doubt, realizing that it's not only cleaner, but probably slightly cheaper and an enormously efficient system. I think that that they've got a situation there where they're effectively a monopoly gas utility in town, and they've also got the Boliven stuff to open up in due course. I think the market has thoroughly underestimated Victoria Oil and Gas. Shares went up a little bit on Friday, but should go a lot higher.
Marvellous stuff. And the last one, Balky.
Faroe Petroleum mustn't be forgotten about, because it is probably the, you know, certainly with the demise of Ithaca, certainly Faroe is the quality player in the E&P space now. It's very much committed to the North Sea, but in particular the Norwegian North Sea, and up there where they are investing enormously efficiently. They've announced today that the Brassey appraisal well, which they've been drilling, has had over 6,000 barrels of oil, of high quality oil, a day. And they're going to drill a sidetrack, which I expect to be successful. I've been waiting for them to upgrade their estimates for this field. At the moment, they've got 43 to 80 million barrels in the book. They clearly won't do that now until they finish the sidetrack. But I would have thought that, all being well, it won't be 43 to 80, it'll be 80 to something else. Mm-hmm. This has got fantastic local infrastructure, nearby fields which can take off the hydrocarbons. Makes this into a really valuable field for Faroe. Market again has underestimated the potential here. The oil sector has been under a bit of a cloud because the oil price was down 15% since in the last quarter, and I expect at some stage to bounce, because I'm not that bearish. Faroe Petroleum, absolutely high quality one for the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you know what? At a very interesting level, actually, because at about 80 pence on the chart there, you can see back in, 2016, it tested that 80 pence level several times, so it was resistance, broke through it towards the end of 2016, and it's come back now. So that was, previous resistance equals future support. So you'd see an interesting place here now, 85 pence, it's hovering around that support level. So it'd be interesting to see if it holds there.
Yeah, high quality play there, mate.
Cheers. Marvellous, Monkey. Well, listen, have a nice week, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it. Bye now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, always there, Ascent Resources, AST. At four, Audio Boom, ticker there is Boom. At three, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At two, Sound Energy, SOU. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was UK Oil and Gas. UCOG is ticker there. All right, top five most liked analysts. In fact, there's a joint number five, so it's pretty much six here. Joint five, it's Harvest Minerals, agronomic results from the Arapua fertilizer project. At five also, Vesarion, final results for the year ended 31st of March 2017. At four, Zenith Energy, ZEN, Team B strikes success at well M45. At three, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, agreement. At two, Premier African Minerals, PREM, project updates. And number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was from Talao Energy, TLOU, mining license application and RFP submission. That's a request for proposal, power station proposal, of course, to the Botswana government. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos.
appreciators.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.